Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Cal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s. But before they all sold out, see it all together if you're with me now.
Nerds ruin everything.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're here to ruin your post-Thanksgiving weekend.
Exactly. You're already like tripping out on post-turkey, post-turkey malaise. You're looking at probably buying a couple of things.
Or you went out yesterday. Well, we're recording on Saturday. You went out yesterday and spent, like me, way too much money, and now you're just like, what have I done?
So with that, why don't we talk a little bit about Black Friday shopping and what we picked up and what we didn't. And you know, the thing that I'm pissed off at, and it's such a stupid baby bullshit thing, is that neither the Blu-ray nor the 4K for Top Gun went on sale.
I was baffled by that. So I went by Best Buy late yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, not late, but late for most Black Friday shoppers.
But yeah, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. Right? And I was like, well, I'll stop in here. I was killing some time waiting because I was going to meet up with a friend of mine. And like I was browsing their selections, and they had a lot of really good stuff on sale. Like almost all the Pixar Blu-rays were $10, and like I had to stop myself from getting all of them. And I was just like, I love Toy Story 4. That's the one I'm gonna buy. But yeah, I was like, oh, you know what? Like, I wouldn't mind having Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah.
But also it's a perfect kind of like my dad hasn't seen it, and I could just be like, because he really doesn't like going to the movies anymore. Just be like, here, I know you haven't seen this and you will love this. You know, like a great Christmas gift. But like it was not on sale anywhere. Like even like on sale, like for like $15 or $18 or whatever. Like I was baffled by that. Baffled.
It's
the biggest movie of the year.
Exactly. And it's already been out for a month. So it's not like retailers aren't going to get those super hardcore fans that wanted to pay. And here's the sickest part about this. As soon as I heard this, I was like, oh, fuck you guys. It got announced December 21st is when they're dropping it on Paramount Plus. So there's no reason now to keep that thing at $30 that the Blu-ray was and the $35 that the 4K was. And I'm like,
yeah, move the units, okay, right?
Yeah,
like before
exactly.
It's on streaming, move the units, you know?
Yeah, because, I mean, and Paramount should know this also, is that they shot themselves in the foot earlier in the year when they released Scream too soon on streaming. And they bit themselves. They shot themselves in the foot with the 4K.
I mean, it was like still in the theater. Not that plenty of movies are still in the theaters and get released on streaming. But Scream was still like, it was at the tail end of its theatrical run. But like that was a really big hit for them. Like outside of Top Gun, I mean, it was like, and it was good. And it was just like, oh, here it is on stream. Like, you're not Disney, man. Like,
exactly. Well, and then it's like even Disney had all their 4Ks on sale, like all of their Marvel movies. So if you really wanted to, you could like, you know, bulk up on Phase 4 Blu-rays.
I meant 4Ks. To text you, and I forgot. Did you happen to catch Thor Love and Thunder's fine, but Amazon also had the Thor Love and Thunder 4K on sale.
Yeah, $8. I picked it up. I went so fast.
Shit. $8, it's dude. Back ordered to almost January.
Yes. I got it mid, like my current status says like December 18th.
Yeah, mine was between December, like 21st and January 3rd.
Yeah, I almost did. I made the mistake of waiting on the light year of 4K because, I mean, okay, let's be honest. Like 4K,
I haven't watched it.
It's okay. But I mean, for $8 on a 4K, like what really stands out in that movie is its visuals, right?
Yeah.
And so to have like a raw 4K of it, like it's the reason why I picked up Elvis on 4K and $10, even though like I'm of a theory of that movie. That movie's both good and terrible, and most of the time at the same time. I mean, that's just Baz Luhrmann for you, right? But the visuals are so striking, and HBO Max, when I watched it, could not handle the visuals. It started pixelating. It was so deep. So I want to see a raw stream of it, right? Like in 4K, like a 4K disc is the only way you can get like a properly compressed and uncompressed, because of the fact that your 4K unit is much better than your stream. Your stream isn't even 1080p if it's a 4K stream. Let's just be honest here. But my like the $10 Elvis 4K is backed up until like January 7th or 8th or something like that for me. So like there's these deals that they go deep on, and it's weird because it's like I also picked up Jurassic. You probably saw it in the fucking picture that I sent you. The things that I picked up.
I thought about getting Jurassic World. I meant to look on Amazon. I know it probably wouldn't be on sale, but you would know. Is there one of those like shitty packaging, like here's all the movies in the series. Like, is there like a deluxe, like cool box set with all the films?
There's not a cool box set with all the films, but there is a 4K. Like they released it at the same time, a 4K box set of all six films. Okay. They have one. It is not on sale just as of yet. I haven't seen it on sale, but I have seen it. That's how I picked up my Jurassic, my Jurassic Park last year before the movie came out. I got the 5 box set, and it was like $24. I don't know, man. It's like it's weird because like there's some things that are super awesome on sale, and then there's just like the things that you wanted and expected, they're just not there. Like, man. I full well expected the new 4K for Star Trek, the Star Trek box set, you know, the one that has all the shit there. Not on sale. Not on sale. I mean, you know, it's weird because it's like some of these retailers, it's like, so you guys, like, and then like I always take it as a grain of salt because I'm like, you guys do realize that Criterion does 50% on their discs every fucking year with Barnes & Noble. You can afford, if they can afford,
once a year with Barnes & Noble, and then like twice a year on their site.
Their site. Yeah, if they can do that. Like, the one that I'm pissed off about right now is I'm staring at the price cost for Real Genius, the 4K. It's $16 fucking dollars. If you give that to me at $9.99, I'm picking that shit up. But at fucking $15, same with the new Ghostbusters movie. So you're telling me that, like, and then Columbia is doing this, right? So like these are Columbia movies. So you're telling me that the new Ghostbusters movie that's been out for 18 months and is on Stars is worth more than like say the Batman, which has a lot more special features on it. Just like, it's so weird how they kind of like pick and choose.
Somebody like, did have Ghostbusters on sale or Ghostbusters Afterlife on sale, but I can't remember who it was, but it was in a box set with all, or not even a box set, just a 3-disc set with all three movies, which was fine, but like it's just well, you're probably like, unless I'm getting it like dirt ass cheap, like if I'm buying a set with a bunch of films, I want it to look like a set, not just like this weird like crosshatch like cover art, and like I want it to look like something. you know?
No, absolutely. Like I got the Spider-Man 4K box set when it came out, like the one that had both series, like it didn't have the Holland stuff, but it had the Raimi stuff, and then it had the Mark Webb stuff, and that's a nice box set. It has like a nice little booklet, you pull it out, like I like that. I like a consistency there, right? Like so it's weird how some people play at this and some people don't, and it's just like I just like think about it, and I'm looking at the like I said, like the Top Gun was my one thing that I wanted. I was like, I'm not going to buy a stream. I'm not going to watch it. I want it on 4K. And it just, like, it hasn't dropped. Like, I have it in my cart and an alert to let me know once it drops, but it just hasn't dropped.
I mean, maybe it will after it hits streaming, because we're looking at this too consumerist, and we should look at it as, like, maybe it is selling well enough that they're like, we're not going to drop the price, like, because we're still moving units at $30 a pop, you know, which that's fair. And once it hits streaming and sales slow down, maybe they'll slash the price. But I hate that it's not going to be before Christmas, because I'm not going to buy my dad a $25 Blu-ray that he's going to watch one time and put on the shelf. Like, he'll watch it, he'll enjoy it, and he probably won't watch it again, you know? So, but for like 10 or 12 bucks or even 15 bucks, like, here you go. I know you're going to like this. You didn't get a chance to go see it in the theater, you know, Merry Christmas. Like, that would be great, but you know, it is what it is. Did you pick up any games?
No, I didn't, dude. Like, that was the one thing, because I couldn't find, like, I think I texted you, I couldn't find anything. Like, and they're like, you know, right now, guys, like, please, like, we've talked about how, like, Nintendo games are never going on sale. Like, they're like $20 to $30 off some of these Nintendo games, and I was like, I have them all.
I when I was looking at Best Buy and Target, I was like, man, I bet Adam has all these games. But I'd been putting off buying Zelda, Breath of the Wild, because it's $60. And I'm like,
yes,
I know that's a game, like, I'm going to spend $60 on. And like, I need to make sure I make time for it. It's not just something that I pick up on a lark and like play it for a little while. Like, I need to get invested in it. And like, right now I don't have the time for that. But then I found it for $40. I was like, game is not gonna be $40 for a while unless I buy it used. So like, I could not pass it up for 20% off. Or $20 off. And then I picked up, cause I don't have a PS5, but I have PS4. I picked up the Spider-Man Miles Morales game, which I've been wanting for a while. When the price dropped to like $30, I was like, eh, but for 20, I was like, that fucking Spider-Man game was just,
The Miles Morales game, I actually kind of prefer. Like, okay, so don't get me wrong, the regular Spider-Man is great, but like, Miles Morales is my dude, and that game gets the character of Miles Morales as gets him right, as well as Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse does. Like, it's kind of like, you kind of get this, like, where, like, what I love about Miles is that he's always trying to be good and always trying to, like, side on the right side of things, and just, like, you know, and they get that right. They absolutely 150% get that right with the game. Like, that was, like, one of the first PS5 games that I played. It's actually kind of perfect that you're playing, like, that you could be playing it this season, because it takes place during Christmas. Like, it's like a Christmas time game.
I was gonna start playing it, too, but this morning I got up and... we didn't talk about this last week, but so Adam sent me the new Mario Rabbids game, knowing how much I had loved playing the previous one. And I don't even think I thanked you on the podcast, but I got up this morning and I was like, I was like, I want to play something. And my Switch was literally right next to me, and I'd put the game in the Switch to like boot it up and download any, because there's always a fucking update you gotta download. And I did that like literally 3 days after you sent it to me, and I just haven't had even time to play much at all because of the Thanksgiving week. And I just picked up my Switch, turned it on, and started playing. And so it might be New Year's before I get to Miles Morales.
And you know what? There's nothing wrong, because you know what? Like, I like this a little weird side thing. Like, why the fuck do we always think that winter is over with New Year's? It's not. It fucking stays around until like, yeah, like baseball season should be like the start of spring training is literally like the ending of winter time. Like, even in LA now, because of, you know, hashtag, you know, environment shit. But we're not getting into the 70s and 80s once we dip down until at least March, March or April. And it's like, dude, why do we always think that? Like, like, it's always like, I guess it's just the Christmas time. But
yeah,
how is the new Rabbids? Let's go ahead and talk.
So you have not played it?
No, I have not. And you're very welcome, dude. Like, I it's the least I like.
It was such a sweet thing. I was like, such a surprise. I was just like, when you were like, I sent you something. I was like, oh, Adam, like, he either double bought. Like, not that it still wouldn't be sweet. I'm like, hey, he went out and bought like the set, because I do it too. Like, oh shit, I already own this. Like, yeah, I was like, I thought maybe you got, or like, you got a comp of a Blu-ray or something that just came out that you'd already bought. And I was like, that's really nice of him. I opened it up. I was like, holy shit. He sent me the new Mario Rabbids game. That's so awesome. So I played. I can't say level, because let me start out with a negative. So they did the one thing that almost every game does that kind of bugs me, is they changed something that I thought worked just fine to begin with.
Yes.
So it's still a turn-based strategy game, but the way they do the turns now, like, they've changed it. So it's the interact, that like the way you do things is a little bit different. Now, it was very straightforward in the original game. It took some getting used to. And I'll say this about myself. Like, it's also my fault, because I am the person who just keeps mashing A when like the words are popping up on the screen.
Yes.
You're like, I should probably read this, but I'm just keep hitting A because I want to get to the fun part. Like, I don't want to read the instructions. So I was a little confused on how to do things when I got into the first battle, which it like almost immediately puts you into a battle. Like, it's a little bit more open world, which is nice, but it's also kind of distracting because you can just wander around a little bit more. But it's fine. It's still fun. There's a cool thing that like there's like trees and bushes and stuff in the open world, and you can just walk up to them and like shake them. And that's pretty cool. Like, the environment is more interactive.
They're taking a little bit from Animal Crossing, because a part of Animal Crossing is shaking trees to make sure things come out of it, like nuts and acorns and shit like that. Okay. All right.
It looks incredible. The gameplay is fine. Like, it's really, really good. And I think all the changes that they made to the way the fighting element is are all valid. But, like, unlike everybody else, I just finished playing Mario Rabbids. Everybody else finished that game 4 years ago. So, like, it's still really fresh in my mind. So, as I was playing, stupid me is just like, I know how to play this game because I just finished the other one, and I just breezed past all the like new parts of it, like how to do things. And when I was battling, I was like, what the, like, how do I couldn't figure out how to switch from character to character. I couldn't figure out
so they
how kind to of really actually attack. So
they actually really did change the engine itself, like your controls.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's actually good to know, because whenever I actually purchase it and play it, I'll remember not to, because I'm an aim button masher too, because especially if I'm replaying a section or something, like I'm just like, duh, 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 like, and then sometimes, especially if like sequels for games, I always do that because I figured that they're not going to change the model. They're not going to change it all that much. You know?
Have thought, but
it is,
like I said, I'm not saying it's not an improvement. It's just a thing that always bugged me. I think the mashing through the talking, where that started for me actually was with the Paper Mario games and like Mario Luigi, like Superstars or whatever, like those turn-based
All
games.
Stars, yeah.
Yeah, because there's so much fucking talking. Like those games are so fun, but when you get stuck in a like chat with one of the characters, it's like, oh my God, it just takes so long.
No, it totally does. Like, I'm so just, sometimes, like, especially with, okay, so here's a weird thing about me is that, like, this shows, like, I don't know what it shows, but it definitely shows that I prefer the writing of PS5 games than I do to fucking, and also here's the other thing is that, so I cannot stand that Nintendo, like, I understand why they do it from a technical standpoint, but when you have characters talking like this, wah, 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 wah,
yes,
it really annoys the shit out of me because, like, come on, how much space can dialogue take? But then I think about it and I'm like, it probably takes a lot. It's sound. It's like, and it's unrestricted sound, right? Whereas like in a PS5 game, I'll have, of course, we've all seen the memes. I can't see my subtitles. It's the same thing with me. Like, I always have the subtitles on, but I also like have the sound on, and it's like that nice great combination of like, I can look up and read it really quickly if I'm trying to do something at the same time during a cutscene. But I don't know, it like the story unfolding, I feel like is a lot less, I mean, of course it's a lot less basic in the PS5, right? Yeah. And it's just, it's one of those things where the PS5, they have like, I guess they have more options for dialogue, and it's not so like an eight-year-old would like it. Like,
well, they also have that, like, because like I was talking about, like the downloads, like PlayStation or Xbox games, you always have to download like gigs of stuff. So like, whereas Nintendo doesn't have the capacity for like that, they don't have that like built-in massive hard drives. So like, that is one thing I was like, bonus points to them is I never have to boot up a Nintendo game and wait a fucking hour to play something, because hey, you also have to download this massive thing to play the game. So you know, that's probably part of it, you know, saving space where they can. But yeah, I do hate that Charlie Brown adultish, which I'll say Mario Rabbids like does a really good job of not having that. Like, every character has their like little it's not talk, but like their little like Mario's woo, you know, stuff like that. Like, and as you go to them, like they'll say their one little like verbal emotion or whatever, and then you get the lines of dialogue rather than
yes, this is true. Like it's the one thing I did like. It's kind of like they use the same thing that like the Pikmin games and Animal Crossing use, which if I find the Pikmin game like below and available, I will pick that up, because that's one game that I don't have from Switch that I haven't seen.
I haven't played Pikmin since the very first Pikmin, and I loved it.
Pikmin?
Yes. I loved it, but like for some reason, I like just did not pick up any more of those games.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And while we're talking here, But okay, so like, I just have to say this because I think that you probably like these fucking movies. They have the and this okay, and this will lead into another conversation of the reason why I purchased physical media. So I just bought the. They had like I think for $16 they had the Crocodile Dundee trilogy on Blu-ray.
Oh man,
I picked it up, but that's not the reason why I picked it up. You know why I picked it up? Because it includes the digital fucking copies.
Oh,
and this
yeah.
is a. This is the biggest thing for me. It's like, yeah, you know what, guys? You can pick up, like, you know, they may seem a little bit more expensive, but here's the thing, is that each one of these Blu-rays and DVDs typically come with a digital copy of it. So, like, I'm increasing my library at the same, like, my digital library at the same time I'm doing my physical. And it's, like, literally, like, I got, the main reason why I bought certain movies, like, The Addams Family, Hunt for Red October, Patriot Games, like these like catalog titles, is because they include a digital copy, and I want that digital copy at the same time that I want my physical copy. I picked up The Addams Family for $8, and it has that new, it's that new edition that has the babushka. It's like this extended version with the 5-minute babushka dance number, and I'm like, shit, I gotta pick that up. I gotta watch it before I watch Wednesday, which we did, and we'll be watching that tonight. That's actually our thing that we're gonna be watching tonight is the Wednesday show.
Read any of the reviews?
Yes, I have, and I'm prepared. Okay.
I did not know this was is it Goff? However he pronounced it, Goff and Miller. The guys,
Goff and Miller. Smallville.
I did not know that this was. Like them with Tim Burton.
I didn't either. I just read that, I think, yesterday when I was reading something. I think I was reading an interview with Burton, and they just happened to mention it because they were asking a question about the concept, and they're like, writers or show creators and runners. And I was like, okay.
I mean, Smallville was very up and down, but when it was good, it was really good. So
yes, it was.
Like I kind of want to watch the show, but also people that I trust watch the show, and like I'm like, I don't know if I should or not. So
like my wife is not like we've like, you know, we've kind of talked about like how we do viewing habits and stuff, but my wife is not like. Like, and this is what I love about her. She's not plugged into film culture at all. Like, she likes what she likes. She's more of a book person. Like, I mean, she'll read anywhere between, like, last year, I think she read close to 90 books.
Good God, man.
Yeah, like, she's...
Meanwhile, I'm on my second year of trying to get through the Dark Tower series. It's like 7 books.
She devours books, but then there are film things that she's just in the bag for, and Tim Burton is one of them. She loves Tim Burton, like not even like it's like an obsessive amount. Like, you know those girls that you grew up with that loves yes. Tim Burton, like, I'm going to marry Tim Burton. Like that's kind of like what my wife was. So she's super in the bag for this. So we're like literally like she's super excited about this, so I'm fairly certain it's going to be one of those things where I'm going to be like, yes honey, it's good, and thinking to myself, shit, I gotta watch 7 more of these fucking things. And the weird part is that they're kind of taking the, like, from the trailers I saw, I was like, okay, so I understand it's Wednesday, but you're literally making Sabrina the Teenage Witch remake. Kind That's of
somebody told me.
Like it looks, they said, very much like watch that.
Sabrina, like the new Sabrina, and I said, yeah, it was okay. It went on a little too long, and they're like, it's kind of Sabrina-ish, and I was like, but that's not really what I want from an Addams Family thing.
No,
you know,
it's really not. It's really not. Like,
you can, like, do that. Just make a new show. Like, why does it have to be the Addams Family?
IP, like literally
yeah,
IP.
Because people, like, people would recognize it.
I mean, I really honestly hope that, like, my hope is that, like, that Christina Ricci is in it a lot, because, like, I adore her. Like, I grew up with Christina Ricci. I mean, I still remember, like, being dragged by my sister and my mom to see that Mermaids, that Winona Ryder, Cher, and Christina Ricci. And I will tell you, when I came out of that, I was like, you know what? Everything's all well and good in this movie. Like, you know, Cher, Academy Award winner, whatever. She's playing the erstwhile mom, like, you know, Winona Ryder. But fucking Christina Ricci at like 6 or 7, being this like alien looking, like, and no offense or anything, but like this very strange, big eyed little girl. But she was a hell of a performer. I mean, even at like, I think I was like 12 or 13, I was like, damn, this kid can roll. And yeah. I've just been in the back since. Like, I adore her in Speed Racer. Like, I think
that's such an underrated movie, man.
Man, yeah. When I saw her in that, her as Trixie, I kind of fell in love with her all over again. Like, it was like one of those things where you're just like, oh man, I really like adore her and everything she does. It's just all like, we're gonna watch it. She's super excited about it. I mean, and like, I'll tell you, like, Addams Family and Addams Family Values, they're like Thanksgiving movies to me because they got released. I mean, you know, you remember when
I saw them in theaters, man. Yeah.
Yeah. They were great. Like, I mean, me and my wife, we have an argument about it. Like, she loves Family Values, like, adores it. Like, she feels like that's a top 10 movie to her, where I like the original. But I'm more of a Gomez fan. Like, I'm more of like a, like, I love Gomez. I love, like, it gets to like almost like talking about the way that I feel about like how a couple should be. And it's like, there is a world where you can be madly in love with your wife and it not be an issue. And it's like, I kind of love that about the Addams Family, is that, and I am also like, I mean,
yeah, that goes back to the original show.
Original. Like,
John Astin, man, was just, he was so fucking great. Like, just
amazing, right? Like, you watch that show and you go, that's kind of like Fred McMurray, but like for goths. Like, he's so fucking, like, just awesome, and he loves his wife, and it's like Raul Julia doubled down.
He supports his children. Like, yes. He is the, like, not because they're not even, they're 25 years apart, but like, the put upon husband, the Al Bundys, show wasn't groundbreaking, but like, it became like, I'm married with children and I hate my life. Like, I hate my job. I come home, my kids annoy me, my wife annoys me. Like, it's just like, oh, that's the new model, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas Gomez was the total antithesis of that. It's like, I support my children. I love my children. I love my wife. I support her. Like, you know, it's just, it's very, and what was always so great about the Addams Family was how, like, just, they were always very welcoming to everybody. And it was when you, like, it was the people that showed up that didn't reciprocate that they were just like, well, you got to go. Like, you know, like, don't.
It was
don't
always be the here. Rude. Yeah. It was always the rude and, always the rude and bullying that got their just desserts. I mean, it's a wonderful, like, Charles Addams, and then eventually the TV show, and then the first two movies kind of understood the central core concept of, just because somebody's different doesn't mean, just because somebody looks different doesn't mean that inside they're not the same. Or, like, let's be honest, the Addams Family, like, everybody was always better and the best version. Yeah. Like, yeah, Wednesday and Pugsley were always trying to kill each other, but they loved each other and they were always had each other's back. And, you know, it was always a game, right? Like, Uncle Fester was always, like, he was, like, the best uncle because he was always showing the kids, like any good uncle does, like you do, dude. Like, you kind of give your, like, you give them just enough of, like, that, like, you know, you show them an R-rated movie when they should be watching a PG-13 movie. Like, that's what uncles do, right? That's what the best unks do. I mean, like, your unk did that to you guys all the time. And I love that about Fester. Like, he may look like, you know, I mean, you know, Smashing Pumpkins jokes aside, he, like, you know, his look is something, but, you know, when it comes down to it, all of these characters in the Addams Family, they have this, like, central core thing of, like, family. It's like, you know, fucking Fast and Furious family, right? But better, because it's the Addams Family. It's fucking John Astin. Like, how do you go from, like, John Astin and Raul to Raul Julia, and it be still kind of like the same love. Like, that's what I always kind of like trip out about, is that at the end of the day, that both iterations, even though they're wildly different at their core, they remain the same. And that I also like those stupid animated films. Like, I didn't get it. Like, it didn't feel like
there are parts of it theme. That are okay, but parts of it that don't really work. Like, I don't think Morticia and Gomez work well in the animated stuff.
No, which you have two of like the best looking actors voicing. Like, okay, that's what.
Yeah,
that
was which my, is also weird.
Yeah, like if you get Oscar Isaac and like, let's be honest, like other than maybe Elizabeth Debicki, like statuesque blondes like Charlize Theron, are you fucking kidding me?
If they were in a live action version of the Addams Family, yes. I might be like, this is fucking awesome. But exactly, like, it right? just didn't work in the animated. Although I will say this, the animated Addams Family has, of the last like maybe 10 years, one of my favorite like just asides in film or television. And like Pugsley, something's happening, and mm-hmm. I think Pugsley is like somebody's threatening his life or something. I don't remember the circumstances, but Wednesday says, "Goodbye, Pugsley. I'll never forget you, but I'll try." And like that fucking killed me, man. Like I died. I was like, that is. It's such a sick burn. I'll never forget you, but I'll try.
But that's such a Wednesday, yes. Like
burn. That's what the animated movies I think did get right. That's was weird. That those the
I
kids
forgot about place. That one.
So
I forgot about that one. Like honestly, I was like I had completely forgot about that. That's great. Like I fucking love that. But yeah, so like, back on, like, I mean, we went way. Like, that's
it's funny you brought up John Astin, like, to get to John Astin, though, because, like, I actually did see him in something else this week, which I have been binge watching. It's completely, other than John Astin, it has nothing to do with Addams Family, but, like, you were talking about watching Sprung on Freevee. Yes. And which is such a great show. And I was going to go back and rewatch it because it's very bingeable. It's like 10 episodes and they're all short. Yes. And then I was on Freevee and it popped up that Night Court, the entire series is on Freevee. And I was like, I haven't seen Night Court in 25 years. So I started watching Night Court and I'm through season 2 and holy shit, man. That, like, people do not remember that show enough.
No, they really don't.
It was on for 9 years.
And here's the craziest part.
We still hear about Cheers. We do not hear about Night Court.
And they had just as a great lineup as they did. I mean,
holy shit, there's Ball? So many. And every episode has somebody or two or three people that I'm just like, oh, I fucking love that person. Like that is so great. Like, and it's such a good, like, it almost like the way Frasier used the call in, like you get these guest stars to just call in so you can give them advice. Which is funny because both of those shows have revivals coming next year, Frasier and Night Court.
Night Court does? I know about the Frasier one.
Yeah, they're doing a Night Court revival with John Larquette's going to be in it. And
Really?
Yeah.
John Larquette, like, wow. Okay.
It's coming in January or February. It's a mid-season show.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Just like original Night Court was. John Larquette's coming back, and the judge is going to be the girl from Big Bang Theory, not Kaylee Cuoco, one that married
Sheldon.
Not her.
Blossom. The one that married.
Howard. The one that married Howard.
Howard, yeah.
She's great, but she's a great actress. Actually, all those actresses on that show were fantastic and were almost always sidelined for the dumbass geekiness of the male characters. So
It's Melissa Rauch.
Yes, yeah. Her.
Wow. Okay.
She's playing Harry's daughter.
They even got wow. That's actually a great kind of dude. They got everybody in this. Like, I'm looking at the cast list. I was like, holy shit, they just
I think anybody who can anybody from the original show that can be in it will probably show up. Unfortunately, like half
the cast is passed on.
Matt passed away in 2020. Marky Post passed away in 2020. Harry Anderson passed away in like 2018, I think.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's three people gone. I know that Roz is still she's still alive, and she actually recently just came out.
She did. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good for her.
Years ago. Yeah, I read an interview with her, and she was like, it's such a weird thing, but like she had confided in her mom that she was gay years and years and years ago, she said, but then her mom asked her if she would wait until she passed to go public with it, which feels kind of shitty, but also like
it's sweet
that you would like honor your mom like with that request. I know she's still working. Of course, Bull, that dude still, he does a lot of voiceover work. We talked about Batman a few weeks ago, and he was Killer Croc, I think.
Yes, he was. He was. And I mean, you know, Richard Mull is just great. Like, he in the 80s, man, fucking Charles Band used to use him like a motherfucker. He would show up in bad sci-fi action movies all the time. I mean, that's how I knew him. And then when my parents started watching Night Court, like, he was my favorite part because he was the dude that I knew, right? Like, he was the guy that that I always saw in like movies like Evil Speak or what's the freaking one? Sword and the Sorcerer, Dungeon Master, like all these like weird ass movies that I used to watch when I was a kid. And then I saw him on Night Court and I was like, no, he can't be the goofy bailiff. But yeah, like, oh man, dude, I'm actually excited about this. Like, I want to see where this goes. I definitely, that's awesome. How's your watch? How is it? Like, I'm always scared when I reapproach things that I haven't seen. Like, Barney Miller was one of those ones that I reapproached.
That's funny, because I didn't know that it was the same guy that created Barney Miller created Night Court. Yes, I just found that out.
He had a great way of making single location comedies.
Mm-hmm.
But I was pleasantly surprised at how forward thinking Barney Miller was, and how much it was fucking Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, Brooklyn Nine-Nine stole wholeheartedly from that show.
It is surprising how there are a few things that I'm like, you probably couldn't get away with that today because of just people being, and rightfully so, more sensitive about certain topics. But like,
yes,
you know, it being a Night Court in New York City, like a lot of the cases involve like prostitution things and just stuff like a little sketchier things. And it's very, very forward thinking. Like, there is an episode in season two where I forget what the guy gets pulled in for, but he's gay. Oh, it has to do with he raises dogs, and his dog, he's suing another dude because this other dude's dog attacked his, got his dog pregnant. He like breeds dogs, and it's a whole thing anyway. And the guy like makes a pass at Dan, not an overtly like ass grabby kind of like, oh, that's a little like much, not right. But it like very much just like, oh, I thought I saw you, like I thought you were looking at me in a certain way. And he kind of just like asks him out to dinner. And of course, Dan gets really, really offended that somebody would think he was gay. And then they wind up getting trapped in an elevator together. And, like, Dan is still being, like, really abrasive about it. But they handle it in a way that I don't even think today's shows, like, would handle it. Like, it just becomes, like, I think today's stuff gets a little too preachy. Like, by the end, Dan isn't like, well, boy, I was sure wrong about that. Gay people are people, too. Like, he's still that same kind of, like, sleazebag, shitty character. But, like,
yeah,
you also are still learning a lesson. Like, it's not as preachy, you know, which that is one thing about older shows. Like, I also watched a couple of episodes of All in the Family, which is also on Freevee, the entire series. And, like, that was another show. It's like, you couldn't get away with any of this today. And
no, even though, like, let's be honest, even though he was, Norman Lear was teaching lessons about, like, that's the weirdest part about that show. It, like, is that it's very apparent, though it's not preachy, that Carol O'Connor is not a man to be, like, you're laughing at him and not with him.
And that's the thing about if you did that today, the thing that you can't get away with, and you're kind of seeing it in, like, a show like The Boys, is you have this despicable character, and instead of people laughing at them, they're like, yeah, like, you know, you have those people very vocally being like, yeah, he's right. And you can't do that because people have a platform to then, like, today have a platform to, like, really create this echo chamber of, like, yeah, he's right. And it's like, no, the point is he's wrong. Like, that's the
exactly point. Well, and here's the best part of what I love about Norman Lear, who is fucking 100 years old and still fucking doing it and still angry.
I mean,
and
that still reboot of One Day at a Time was so fucking good.
Dude, it was so fucking hard to get through, though, sometimes, because, like, you could only watch an episode at a time because it would hit you with something hard. Mm-hmm. Like, but what I loved about Norman Lear is that after All in the Family, and he realized that this was all about complicity, that he changed it and he went on a run of The Jeffersons, Sanford and Sons, and Good Times before he went back to, like, he created three shows about Black families. Rather than go with All in the Family and continue on with this, like, he went, you know what? I can't teach people this way. I'm going to figure out another way. And he did it smarter. Like, he did it, like, I don't know. Like, it wasn't until Maude, he came back and did Maude, where he went into white characters again, or One Day at a Time. And it's kind of interesting that he did this thing where he adjusted, but he didn't, like, it wasn't like it wasn't a weird thing where he was like, I'm going to shut down All in the Family. He kept it running and he kept on doing what he was supposed to do. But then he created, like, through that show, he was allowed to create, like, Jefferson's was a spinoff. Sanford and Sons was a spinoff. Good Times was a spinoff. It's like, it's weird to watch how he kind of took something and rather than fight it, he was like, okay, let's let these idiots do whatever they're going to say. I'm going to continue on with my thought process on these kinds of people, but I'm also going to look at it from a different perspective and try to teach people about, like, understanding. Like, ultimately, like, that's what All in the Family is about an idiot that doesn't have any kind of compassion or understanding for people other than himself. And it's trying to teach him that even though he'll never learn. It's like continuing on, right? Yeah, I mean, it's great. Like, how is it, like, as a show? It's been so long since I've seen the show.
It's still so watchable. The only thing, and I'll say this, it's understandable. It's a TV show from the 80s. Everything was shot on fucking, like, not film,
video tape. Yeah. So it has that weird,
like, shit. It
yeah, I can only imagine.
Terrible. Like, it looks so bad, especially like if I was watching this on, like, a little tiny tube color TV, it might work all right. But on my, like, 50 inch, like, flat screen, high def television, oh my God, it looks so fucking bad. Like, they all these people they bring in and they talk about how good looking they are. And I'm just like, no, yeah, none of these people look good. Like, there's not a single person that's been on this show that, like, Marky Post has been in one episode because she doesn't really come into it until season three, I think. She's in one episode in season two. She's the only one that I'm like, yeah, she does look pretty good, but like, she still looks like shit because of the way it was shot. But if you can get past how absolutely terrible it looks, and keeping in mind that it is nobody's fault, like, no one in 1984 or three or whatever could have ever thought that, like, it was going to get to a point where, like, it needs to look so fucking good because this is going to be blown up to a degree that, like, you're going to just, like, everybody's just going to look grainy or fuzzy or, like, it's just, that's the only thing. It holds up so well. It's so fucking watchable that, you know, and like, not to get off on another little side tangent, but you're talking about all those other shows and this show too, like, the death of, like, the wordless theme is something that, like, I mean, it can't be understated for me because, like, all those shows you mentioned, well, All in the Family doesn't have a wordless theme, but, like, Sanford and Son, like, those theme songs, like, I haven't seen Night Court in 25 years, but the minute the theme hit, like, I could hum it. Like, yeah. I could remember that, you know? And, like, yeah, Friends is great. The Scrubs theme is great. Like, they're all fucking good, but they're all just pop songs, you know? And you brought up Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Like, that's one of the few shows in the modern era that has that, like, just musical theme that
hashtag The Office.
Fuck yeah, The Office too. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just so good. Like,
you can hum them.
Yeah.
They're just instantly hummable and they hit you in the chest if you haven't seen, like, Night Court. I can guarantee you as soon as I hear it, it's gonna hit me with some memories, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So. No, I love it.
So yeah, if Freevee, anybody can watch Freevee if you're looking for a, like, just a show to, like, a feel good show. It's good. Like, and, you know, it has the typical, like, 86, like, everything gets wrapped up in 22 minutes and, you know, things kind of move at an accelerated pace, but it's still just, it's fun. You know, there are also certain things and, like, they bring up things that I'm like, yeah, I don't know that reference. I probably knew it in 1987, maybe, but, like, now I'm just like, I don't remember what that was all about.
Oh, that's funny. That is funny. Speaking about, like, feel good, there's something that was released by Disney Plus on Friday, the Guardians of the Galaxy Christmas special. And as somebody who is not necessarily a huge fan of the Guardians in this iteration, I'm very curious to hear what you have to say about this Christmas special. Because it's our second Marvel special that we've gotten. First one was for Halloween, and this one is for Christmas. What did you think of the James Gunn written directed Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special?
I think it's exactly the kind of thing that Marvel needs to be doing more of.
Yes,
like, it is so sweet and funny and kind of tearjerkery, and, you know, I'm sure that there will be people out there who, you know, shit on it, but it's fun. It's very light. There are actually stakes that, like, change certain aspects of the MCU, specifically those characters, but they do it in a way that's just, I don't know, it's just nice. It's not 2 hours of building up to, like, finding out this certain secret. I won't spoil it for anybody. you know, it's like they literally spilled the beans on it in the first like 2 minutes and then build up to like a big revelation about it. And like, it's so sweet. It's so fun. My brain got a little broken at thinking about the ramifications of, so Kevin Bacon exists as an actor in the MCU. What does that mean for things like X-Men First Class?
Well, okay, so this is the second. Okay, like, let's talk about that. That's a good entry point. Because the plot. Okay, so like, how great of a delivery system is this for giving us information about Guardians 3, a context for Guardians 3 that we didn't really think that we needed, but we kind of need now? And it kind of like kind of breaks your brain, not just about the big secret, but we find out very quickly about something nowhere. They own nowhere. They bought it from the collector. And I have so many goddamn questions, but you know what? I hope James Gunn gives us the middle finger and says, you figure it out for your fucking selves.
Like, yeah, you fill in the blanks. Like, it doesn't really, which I'm down for that. Like, I do think that on the whole, we have spent a lot of time diving into minutiae that really didn't need it. Like, it's a very fine line to walk. You have movies like Black Adam that don't get into things where it's just like, I don't fucking understand what's going on here because nobody will explain anything. And then you have movies that it's like, I'm so tired of listening to the explanation for this thing. Like, there's a fine line. And Marvel used to do it really, really well of like, okay, well, you can roll with this or not. And like, they fell away from that. Like, Thor Love and Thunder is the perfect example of like, falling away from that, which you know, apparently Chris Hemsworth is not happy with how that movie turned out based on his very recent statements, where it's just like, we spend a lot of time in that fucking movie like going over things that like really don't matter, but also skipping over things that kind of we needed to know. Like, it's just, it's all very confusing. Multiverse of Madness kind of has a little bit of the same problem.
It does.
You know, it's the one recent Marvel movie that doesn't, I think, have that problem is probably No Way Home. I think it does. Yeah. It has a good balance with all that. Guardian, most of the TV shows have done okay. Moon Knight is the exception to that rule. Like, I think they also spend a lot of time explaining shit we didn't need explained and not explaining things that we really needed to know more about. But yeah, this was, it's perfect. It's very bite-sized. It's like 48 minutes or so.
Yeah, 48 minutes with an end credit scene that doesn't matter, but it's kind of like the kind of post credit that I want. Okay, can we talk?
Yes.
Okay.
So I saw a headline that was like explaining the post credit scene of Guardians of the Galaxy Holiday Special, and like I had to go back and rewatch it because I was like, did I miss something? And then I went, I was like, what the fuck? Who's confused by this?
So, like, let's like, fucking Chunky Groot, Thick Groot is like amazing. Like, literally sitting there.
Yeah.
I had to rewind it a couple of times, much to my wife's like dismay, and just sat there and laughing at, like, just full on laughing that they, like, I mean, because Groot's a teenager, right? So he's supposed to be going through his awkward phase. And holy shit, like, that was just the best touch that they could possibly do.
And that's part of the line I'm talking about. Like, nobody ever stops to explain why Groot looks like that. Like,
yeah, why Groot looks like a thick, like he looks like a thick Muppet. Like, he fucking, like, it's like, okay, like, I've been to Disneyland when they had the Guardians and they had Groot, but they have tall Groot, right? And it looks like a costume. That fucking thing looks like a goddamn costume. And I would not doubt that they got somebody in a costume. And they just kind of CGI'd a little bit of it. Because, like, I don't even, like, I kept on rewinding going, what the fuck is this Groot?
I first saw it, I was like, it was off-putting, but not in a, like, oh, this looks like shit kind of way. It was just like, what is happening with Groot? It's like if you were friends with somebody as a kid, like, and then you didn't see them again till they were in high school, you might yes. be like, what the fuck happened?
Like, yes.
Like, but like, you, if you can like process the thought, you're like, oh shit, that's right. So like, we saw him as little Groot, and then we saw him as like bratty kid Groot. Yes. And then now we're seeing him as this like awkward teenager Groot. And that's what he is. It's like this awkward, teenager. It's so, so good. Palm Clemente is just.
Wow. As Mantis is like, finally gets. Okay. So can we just talk about like the team up of Drax and Mantis is something that we never so thought perfect, we wanted,
man.
You, oh my God.
You have this person who like takes, they're both characters that take almost everything completely literal.
Yeah.
And, but then you have one that has almost like Drax has almost no emotion about anything because of his circumstances. And then Mantis has all the emotions about everything because of her circumstances. And you put them together and it just makes this like perfect pairing of, it's so sweet. The thing with the candy cane and the elf.
Elf? Oh,
so fucking just adorable, man.
They're fighting like small children that were put together with no other, like the way that I, like, oh my God, like we kept on, like we had to pause it because just the arguments between those two idiots and how it escalates was so funny to us. It was funny to me because I've had a sister, I've argued with my sister in that way.
Yep.
Or my sister has argued with me in that way. Like, Drax is that guy who, like, I used to do it all the time. No emotions. And just like, no, we're not going to do that. And my sister's freakouts at 8 years old literally was Mantis. Like, that screaming, yelling, like, why are you doing this?
My favorite bit was when they're chasing Kevin Bacon, and she's like, do you want to save Christmas or do you want to go back for the little man? And Drax is just like, the little man.
Little man! But it's the Peter Quill and Christmas.
I want what I want.
But it's the length of time and the fact that Dave Bautista, it was Dave Bautista weekend for us because we got to see Glass. Like, I know that you didn't get, we'll get to that in a minute. The reason why we're not talking about Glass Onion, but like for this weekend for me and my wife, it was Dave Bautista is one of the best like dry comedians in the world weekend because between this and Glass Onion, man, the dude just he knows how to stretch a droll moment to maximum effect. Like he's literally kind of like, I didn't realize that I needed him to be that, like I needed them to be that funny in this because I literally could not stop laughing. The little man comment, just the way he stretches it out, he looks around and he's like, the little man, I don't even understand. Like, this is so good that even anybody's opinions about Chris Pratt, all it takes is his two scenes that he's in it and you go, yeah, I mean, like on screen, yeah, like his first moment and then his like the last part, and I won't ruin it, but I will say this much, that visual moment of what the Guardians do for him, what the Guardians and Nowhere do for him, like hats off to both Gunn and cinematographer Harry Brahm, who is the new cinematographer for Guardians 3 because he gets a new cinematographer for every one of his films. My God, it's the prettiest thing that I've seen in a Christmas movie in a long time.
Yeah.
And like, just full of warmness. Like, you know, it's like, it was weird to watch this unfold and go, man, this is kind of fun. And then Kevin Bacon, like with his.
So great, man.
Yeah. Like, can I ask, like, so do you, like, so like, I loved the so like is it mean that like are we gonna like what I loved was and it kind of gave me some false hope was what he says at the end, what Kevin Bacon said, because like Kevin Bacon becomes part of the family, and that's what I loved most about this. Does that mean that Kevin Bacon, like going back to your original thing, does that mean we're gonna see more things with him in it?
I mean, I could hope, like even if it's just like a weird Jeff Goldblumish kind of like show up now and then, like
yeah,
he's just like, yeah, I'm down for like whatever, like I'll show up and stick my head in, and you know, like I mean, like how great would it be at like Guardians 3, like at some point in the movie he's just like wandering around the ship, you know, something like, you know, it's just stuff like that, you know.
I was gonna
ask you, what did you think about the animated segments?
That's what actually got me. Like, that's kind of like what, like the, when they showed the two, because of Rooker, like, yeah. And Rooker gets, and it's, what I loved about it was the kind of animation that, that Star-Lord would have thought in his mind.
Mm-hmm. Like, it's not Bakshi-esque.
Yes. Very Bakshi, very heavy metal.
Yeah.
Like, it's very that kind of, I know people, like somebody would like hit me up and say, you're wrong, but the kind of cheaply animated, the kind of cheap animation that you kind of are remembering from the late 70s and early 80s that would have been on VHS. And it's kind of perfect. It's exactly what you would want from, like, if they did an animated, if they did like an animated special after this and they just got the Guardians to voice it, I'd want it in this style, because that seems like perfect for the Guardians.
Yeah, I thought it was great. It looks fantastic. It's a nice ode, even though some people may not realize it, because I mean, you don't really even have access to the Star Wars Holiday Special, but yeah, it is a nice kind of like ode to the animation in the Star Wars Holiday Special. And it does validate the fact that like we can now create animated things that are officially part of the MCU.
Yes.
Which I think is important.
Well, and then like the first one that like, this is like the first test, right? So the next one is the Spider-Man show that they're saying is supposed to be like the high school years, that's supposed to be a part of the MCU, which I'm still waiting to see if they're going to actually get Tom Holland to voice it, which they actually should if they're going to make it canonical, right? But yeah, no, absolutely. It's kind of great because I like the fact that they chose not to do a traditional animated style, like a current animated style, because that just wouldn't make sense. I do like that it's part of it. It's like any holiday special, it has a little bit of music, but they find the perfect way to do it. Like the old 97s.
They're great, man. Like they're so good. And like, they're such a, like, I've enjoyed them. Like they did the theme for, I'm drawing a blank on the name of the show now. Oh God.
Did they do My Name is Earl?
No. Maybe I'm wrong. Community. Didn't they do the thing for Community?
Oh, yes. Yes, they did. Dan Harmon. That's right. Yep. Yeah. No, they did. They absolutely did. But the fact that they don't, like, they say the old 97s, but, like, when you watch it, they're exactly what you would expect from a holiday special for a sci-fi TV show.
Yeah.
Or for a sci-fi. They're all in makeup. But, again, in Marvel, true Marvel fashion, they probably spent more money on this 45-minute special than they probably than most films have as a budget. Like Morbius's budget is probably the same as the Guardians. That's how big it is. They had ILM do these special effects. They did not, like, that's the one thing I appreciated, is that they did not skimp out.
Yeah, and there was not, like, I do love that Gunn for the actual characters, like almost everybody except for Groot and Rocket is practical. Like, no Like, there's no CGI'd up, you know.
Yeah. And, I mean, yeah, everybody, like Batista, Nebula, Mantis, they're all, like, you know, they're all.
Nebula's dancing at the end. Is,
oh, my God,
like,
yes.
I give it to Karen Gillan, like, to not break character to, like, actually dance. Like, she dances like she's fighting.
Like, yes, like, so it's perfect. So great. When they do the duo. And, okay, so, like, hats off to Bacon or Gunn for letting Bacon, like, pair up with the old 97s to do, an original Christmas song that, to be perfectly honest, I went on to Spotify and I instantly put onto my Christmas list. Like, everything
I need the soundtrack on vinyl. Like,
fucking
I need
fucking
this
it.
On vinyl.
You're fucking absolutely right. And how much do you want to bet that, like, come Christmas time, we're going to get a Disney drop? Oh, holiday special, Guardians holiday special. We're both going to be trying to fucking get that vinyl.
Yeah, like, I would. I mean, if it's an online only, like, $35 one disc vinyl, whatever, like, I don't care. Like, I'm buying it. Like, all the music is so good. Yes. Especially that song at the end.
The Bacon one or the
the
Pumpkins
Bacon
one.
Well,
okay,
Smashing Pumpkins is good too, but, like, the Bacon is so, you know, if you've never heard the Bacon Brothers, like, it sounds ridiculous because, like, there's so many stars that think they can act and sing, you know, including former MCU great Robert Downey Jr., who's not terrible, but he's not, you know, there's a reason he's only got, like, one actual album. But Scarlett Johansson, like, she sings too, like, and she's good, but
she's
like,
okay. Yeah.
Kevin Bacon's really fucking good. Like,
good. He spent, we had a decade where he didn't act and he just toured with his brother.
Yeah.
Like, and he was good. He's fucking good. Like, he's probably the best out of the actors that do this. Yeah, I can't think of anybody better. Like, nobody else. Like, not even, like, Russell Crowe wants to be a rock star.
Yeah, I've got that 30 odd foot of grunt.
30 odds of grunt.
Yeah.
That one song is badass. I cannot remember what it's called, but that now I'm gonna have to go on to Spotify and fucking figure it out, because that one song, I know there's that one fucking song that's awesome from him. But also, we didn't even talk about, like, where they got the poster from. Like, the going into the club, holy shit. Like, I didn't know that I needed that. I didn't know I needed Mantis and Drax to go into a club and start drinking.
Yeah.
But also make money. Like, it was wild. Like, I loved the weird divergence that they went on before they got to Kevin Bacon. Like, the throwing of Mantis. I mean, they're so good.
It's great, man. It's so good. It is the perfect, like not palate cleanser, but, like, the perfect, like, I need to get in the Christmas mood. And
exactly.
Like, I went from watching that to watching Home Alone 2 and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. So
I don't know if I can this year with Planes, Trains. Like, it's, it hits you in.
I haven't watched it in years, man. And I like the last, like, 15 minutes of that movie is such a, like, just emotional gut punch.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of how I felt, like, how I feel about John Candy and how much emotion is tied to him. Even before that, it was one of those movies where it's like, okay, I can stop watching it at this point because it becomes very serious and very kind of like, I don't want to cry today. So
they leave each other the first time, you can turn it off. Cause after that, it's just like tears and tears and tears and tears.
It really is. I mean, and like in this one hides something, man, like the two people that play off that final scene in this movie, we won't ruin it. Like, we ruin everything, but not everything. Because it's so, man, the person that plays that, the whole scene, when he or she gets that moment and they get to say something, it's so earnest, but man, does that person elevate those lines. I mean, it's like James Gunn wrote it for that person, knowing yeah. that person could sell it because the first film and what they say in that first film. That's all I'm going to say, but man, does it feel like Christmas at that moment? And when he says what he says and it recontextualizes everything, man, that hits hard. What I like about Guardians is that it's about a dysfunctional family that bitches and moans at each other. But then at the moment that it becomes super fucking important that they need to come together, they come together. And this kind of is like a mini version of that, except for it's done. It's not like all of these guys are being assholes. It's like they're really trying to help somebody out. And that's what I missed about Guardians, the iteration of Guardians that James Gunn has made, is that it's not about them doing good. It's trying to find the way. I'm almost feeling like the third one is going to be about like that solidifying. We have to do good. No more fucking around. No more doing stupid side hustles. No more rocket. You can't take the Harbor Layer batteries anymore.
I won't ruin what he gets for Christmas in this movie, but it was perfect.
Oh my God. Yes, it was. It fucking, everybody gets a Christmas gift and it's great.
It's such a, just a fun time, man. And made me miss those old Christmas specials that you could only catch, once a year. And, mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, I know they won't, but if Disney was just nope, after December, we're taking off the platform. It'll be back next Thanksgiving. That would just make me happy. It's you only get to watch it one time a year. That's it. Yeah. So
that would be pretty fucking amazing. If they did that, I almost want them to do that now. I kind of want them to take away Werewolf by Night.
Because it's, you can watch it on Halloween.
Yeah.
it would be very, it just kind of harken back to the, and Disney used to be a company that did that. We're putting this VHS out. It'll be out for 4 months, 6 months, whatever. Then it goes back in the vault. You might not see a copy again for another 3 or 4, 5, 6 years, whenever, 10 years, whatever.
That's perfect. That would be perfect. And it would make it special again. It would make these things special. I do have a question for you. I have my own, but if they're going to do these holiday specials, which it seems like they are, what's the next, what would be conceptually one that you would like to see? These MCU people doing this holiday. I have mine, but I'd like to hear yours first.
I don't know. That's tough, man. It's very, it sounds very fucking, I'm just going to say, I would love a Captain America 4th of July special.
Yes.
Just a very, it doesn't have to be super kind of yay America, but just a 4th of July Captain America thing, I think would be awesome,
Directed by the Russos.
Yeah.
And bringing, here's the thing. Do you do old man Cap or do you do,
all 40s of it.
Cap?
You do all of it. 45 minutes of, you start with you bookend it with old man Captain America. And then you just kind of hit, it doesn't even have to be it could be bookended live action and animated segments in between,
That would be great.
Him talking about fighting in World War II, and then maybe something set in the maybe pre-Avenger or right at post-Avengers era, and then something set during the blip. These three little interstitial things bookended by old man Cap. That would be great.
You trumped mine because I just wanted to do Ant-Man and Wasp, Valentine's Day holiday.
Oh my god! now I want that. Fuck everything.
Right? That. Like how they got back together? Because in the trailer, it looks like they're together again. Yeah. Which is kind of funny because we never see them together. Like I love that it's a trilogy of movies where
we don't ever get the romantic couple actually being a yes. couple. Like we exactly. start with like. The lead in to like, oh, they're gonna be together, and then by the time we get to the next movie, they're just like, fuck you too.
Because like, to be perfectly honest, I was hoping that Ant-Man and Wasp would be like the Nick and Nora Charles of yeah. the MCU, which they're not. Like I do appreciate Peyton Reed's like insistence that, like you said, like we don't see the relationship. We see the build up to, we see the disarray of. And now maybe we're going to see the, like, you know, the finally the rekindling of it, like, and yes. we will actually see it in Quantumania. I don't know. I mean, you know, a movie that has like a tiny universe and then fucking, you know, Bill Murray at the center of it. I have no idea. But I would have loved to have like had like a Ant-Man and Wasp Valentine's Day special where like, you know, they like, and I know, okay, so. Don't get mad at me, guys, but this movie is the rom-com of all rom-coms, regardless of who directed it and who stars in it. But to do like kind of Annie Hall by way of Ant-Man and Wasp,
yeah,
would be fucking amazing. Like having like, you know, us hear the story of how he lost her because she's so great and she's such a superhero to his kind of nebbish semi-criminal would be great. But it done in 45 minutes, very compact. That would be something I would love. Because I couldn't think of anything else because it's like, okay, so, you know, Cap with 4th of July seems very apropos. Like it does. It really does. Yeah. Or you could do him do Memorial Day and just
yeah.
have him.
Go, yeah.
That like would be good. 10 minutes of or him Veterans just walking Day around. Or
like Veterans any of our, you know, kind of like, you know, the military is, you know, and it doesn't have, like I said, don't have to be like yay America or like pro military, just like, yeah, like, you know, these are the circumstances. This is what these people like fight for, you know, it's just stuff like that.
Yeah.
So do you want to take 5 minutes and ruin Andor for everybody?
Yes, let's do that. Let's do that. And then we'll wrap up with like, you know, the, let's just do this. Let's do this. Like we both have seen the end
for Andor. I did not love the finale, but I also haven't. I really only loved 3 episodes of this show. So, well, maybe 4. I thought it was fine, mm-hmm. but that post-credit scene, I was fucking yep. right.
You were very right. Which, okay, so like that post-credit scene very much so lines up with the first image we see of the Death Star in Rogue One, where they're putting the dish array, that's the final weapon, onto the Death Star, whereas here they're starting the construction of it in space, which is a beautiful image, by the way. Like,
yeah, it looks incredible. I saw a lot of people like throwing hissy fits because they're like, Star Wars doesn't have post-credit scenes, and I was like, oh, I mean, like, come on, like who cares,
is it really?
Man?
Yeah. like, and honestly, is it really a post-credit scene? I mean, a post-credit scene actually has characters. This is just an image. This is yeah. just a like, okay, it, we don't
it's
know where
Darth
to put
Vader
this.
Breathing at the end of Episode One.
Thank you. I liked it. I liked it a lot. I liked that they decided to go big with it, like, but big in a different way than we've seen in Star Wars.
It's big emotionally, which yes. is like not something that you usually get from Star Wars. Like, not that Star Wars isn't emotional, but it's very like obviously emotional. This was like, it kind of, I don't know, it's hard to describe, but yeah, it was like big emotion. Like her speech, like was really something, you know, yeah. like, Just fuck them all.
Yeah, go to war. Go to war.
Kill
sister, brothers and sisters of Ferrix. I like overall what I liked is like so. It's interesting to like watch this as a whole and like you know and think about it as a whole conceptually. I feel like Tony Gilroy and his crew of writers have made something that feels like they're telling a whole story. So this is the first half. The second half is the payoff, right? So yeah. The second half is, oh, and by the way, let's just talk about episode 11. There's no fucking way Cassian's cash stash would ever still be there. I'm just going to say that right now. Yeah. Fuck, that was like, I was like, Gilroy, I know you to be a great, great writer. And that's just reeks of false tone. A false tone. I mean, it was, hope.
Quote, hidden, but it's not like he fucking, like, buried it in a field in the middle of nowhere, like 20 feet down, so that nobody could ever find it. Like, it's like stashing something on top of a cabinet, like, just out of sight. Like, there's a pretty good chance that somebody would have found it. So,
yes, exactly. The other big thing, like, Mon Mothma selling her daughter up the river. Like,
yeah, that, literally, I mean, it's a tough Joffrey. Pill to swallow, man. Like, but part of me is like, I understand what they're trying to do in that's kind of like what Rogue One did, was like, the heroes aren't necessarily always doing the moral thing. They might be doing immoral things for the right reasons, which is what Rogue One kind of was. And I appreciate that. Doesn't make it any more pleasant to watch happen. So
no, not at all. And okay. So, another, like I find everything very fascinating what Tony Gilroy is doing with this show. Like he's adding in things that we don't necessarily see in Star Wars, but it feels a part of it now. Like, so Cyril, and the whole weird thing with Cyril and what's her name? Where he saves her, and then you get this really weird stalker sexual tension thing going on, but they don't show the thing that I think that everybody not only wanted to see, but thought they were going to see, which is the kiss.
Yeah.
Or the sexy time, like the beginnings of sexy time, because we've already seen beginnings the endings of sexy time in Star Wars, which is a major milestone for me. I was like, you know, Star Wars is very asexual for a show that dabbles in like the Game of Thrones, like, you know, brother, sister love. And
they allude to a lot, but they do not, like, really the most we've ever gotten is kissing, and not even like sexy kissing. It's more like watching somebody kiss and from a movie in like the 40s. Like, it's like,
yes,
that doesn't feel like very sexual or romantic or anything.
But this is like straight up, like the Cyril Miro thing is like straight up, like from like it feels like if you just replace Cyril with Michael Douglas and Miro with Sharon Stone, and you've got some weird 90s like psychosexual thriller that's all about like set in the Empire, which, fuck dude, I kind of want to see bad people doing honestly, bad things.
I'm more interested in those two characters than I am anyone, like,
and his fucking mother. Yeah, and his mother.
Much to like, I think, because I talk about the show with Jacob every now and then over on the X-Wing Files, and I don't think he has much interest in those, but I'm just like, dude, I want a show about the ISB and whatever the hell Cyril is doing. Like, I'm just not that interested in any of this rebellion stuff. Like, mostly because, like, A, we've gotten it in other places, and B, those other places, I'm sorry, did it much better. Rebels is a better show than Andor. Like, I'm sorry, you can hate me, but like, it's just a better show. And it gives us more than just like this one perspective. Like, Rebels did a really good job of looking at so many different perspectives. And I'm way more interested in, like, how incompetent the Empire actually is. Like, you know, because for most of our lives, it's been like, you know, how did this happen to him? But, like, you only see bits and pieces of it. Like, even in the first film, you know, evacuate now in our moment of triumph. That is the fucking thesis statement of the Empire. Like, these people are so convinced that they're perfect. Things are just falling. But then you have this one character who's like, I know that something is happening. Like, I feel it in my gut, but every time I try to present it to the people that are over me, they're just like, you don't have any proof. Like, we're not following that up. Like, nobody's going to oppose us. We'll just stomp them out. And then you have her who's just like, no, like, no.
Yep.
And there's a rebellion. And it's way more interesting to me. So, but that's not the show we're getting. You know, we're getting Cassian, which he's great, but he's just not that interesting to me, unfortunately.
No, he's really he hasn't gotten pushed to the point where he is interesting. Like, Stellan Skarsgård as Luthen is way more like everything about that they do with him is amazing, like, and very interesting. Like they had this, like, the one of my favorite sections of the show was, I think it's in episode 9, where he gets caught by the Empire leaving the planet, and that intense ship battle was some of the best ship battles we've seen in since the original trilogy, because they don't necessarily do great battles anymore. Come up with it in a really interesting way. Like, this felt more like the Hunt for Red October than it did like Star Wars. And you know what? Give me that. Like, give me Luthen going around doing shit, like, operating. But then again, we got the promise of that, right? Like, at the end of this one, I mean, Cassian's not gonna get shot, gonna get killed by Luthen. Luthen's gonna take him in and teach him what he knows. So we're gonna get, like, the second half is almost like, are we gonna get a spycraft story finally? Like, is the setup done in which a way that we can finally see, like, you know, Cassian become the assassin black ops guy that we know him to be, that's kind of hinted at the beginning of Rogue One, the one that, like, looks at some weeping dude that's his contact and just murders him without any kind of hesitation, because he knows that he needs to close the loop.
Well, it's weird, because we started with, I think, that version of Cassian, and then somehow took steps backwards. Like, I don't know. Like, his character has become less interesting to me as the show has gone on. I was way more interested in the characters in the prison, way more interested in the ISB, way more interested in Cyril and his weird desk job. Like, that stuff is more interesting to me than what they're doing with Andor. He just feels like he's, I don't know.
It's boring. It feels like a different movie.
Yeah.
No, but it feels like a different movie. It feels like, so somebody told me this, and once it got into my ear, I couldn't unhear it. Cassian Andor's story feels like Jason Bourne before he went into the big Jason Bourne program. Whereas everything else feels like an actual Star Wars politicized Game of Thrones kind of chess moving, movie, show about anxiety and tension of being caught as a spy. Yeah. So, like, the whole buildup to Cassian becoming into this world is so out of tune with this, the person that I was talking with, was so out of tune with everything else that we were doing. It feels the way that Jon Snow feels at, until season 6 or 5. And spoilers for a fucking show that's over 10 years old, I'm going to ruin it right now, where he fucking dies in season 5 and comes back in season 6. It's only at that point does he become involved and he matters. So, yeah, I mean,
and to by the point then, I was just like, I don't care.
Well, luckily, he's coming into the, he's like, I mean, he literally had his moment, to, like his death moment in this, like, you know, but it took half the allotted episodes to get here. And I feel like you could have done it more efficient. Like you could have gotten me to, if you drop the first three and you give me the prison, but you give me a a pilot that's 90 minutes long that gets me to the prison.
Yeah.
I feel like that's a show where Cassian becomes more important.
The first six episodes could have been a two-hour movie.
Yeah, like, a 90-minute movie.
Yeah.
Like, you know.
But we spent six fucking hours, like, building up to the, like, him getting off the planet and then getting involved with a faction of the Rebellion and then winding up in prison. Like, literally, if you just have, you know, 90 minutes to 2 hours of him going through all that and then winding up in prison, and then we get the prison arc, like, I would have been way more hooked. So
yeah.
it's weird because every other fucking critic is just like, every episode is A++++, and this is the best thing that's ever happened to Star Wars. And I'm like, well, I mean, it's good. I'm not saying it's bad. It's not bad. But it's not, I mean, like I said, Rebels has done leaps and bounds, like, more for Star Wars, I think, than this show has. Like, this is, it feels very navel-gazy, which is one thing that Star Wars really fucking needed to get away from. Like,
it really did.
But yeah, it hasn't, so.
No, it really hasn't, but... I mean, ultimately, like, I understand why why people are flipping the fuck out for it, because it's stuff that it doesn't change, like, for me. Okay, so, like, ultimately, the end of my thoughts on this is that I understand why people are flipping the fuck out for it, because they're taking all the good and just and talking about the good. They're not talking about it as a whole. And as a whole, so far, it's a mixed bag. It has some really fucking amazing stuff. But then it also has some really kind of bone grinding stopping narrative stuff that just goes nowhere. Like, it adds some context, but at the end of the day, there's an efficient way.
It's not about the Jedi or the Sith. Finally, Star Wars stuff that's not about the Jedi or the Sith, and we don't see lightsabers. Like, I don't have to see a fucking lightsaber, and it doesn't have to be about the Jedi or the Sith, but, like, if that's your criteria, man, like, come the fuck on. Like, it needs to be propulsive. And for me, this show is not propulsive. Like, outside of the prison arc, there's not been a single time in the show where I was like, I got to the end and I was like, fuck, what happens next? Like, the prison arc was it, man. And, like, you know, like, the episode where he goes to prison is kind of navel-gazy until he gets arrested. Like, and then it's like, oh shit, what happens next? And from that point on until they jump out of the prison into the water, like, I was like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my. And then these last two episodes, I was just like, this is back to where we started, and it is not pulling me in. So, I did want to say, very quickly, I did watch the series finale of The Walking Dead. Fucking glad that show is over. I think if you had 2 years to come up with a fucking finale to end your show, you could have come up with something better than that, because it was bullshit. And I say that as somebody who has mostly enjoyed the last 2 years of the show. Like, about 70-30. Like, 70% of it has been pretty good, which is like the reverse of what the 3 or 4 years before that were. It was a fucking terrible finale. And I also did finish Chapel Wait, which turned into The Walking Dead in the last three episodes.
Oh, kind of disappointing.
Like,
oh man,
it started out as a show about, like, this dude who had been estranged from his family, who fucked off, like, and went to somewhere else to start his own family, and then got kind of drugged back into some nonsense. And, like, it was building up to what I thought was pretty good, and it just turned into, like, them fighting off vampires instead of zombies. Has an interesting twist at the end that makes, because they keep saying there's going to be a season two. I guess Adrian Brody's just too busy. I'm interested to see where a season two would go. But the last, like, three episodes, it's literally like these people holed up in some houses fighting vampires. And it's fine, but it, like, it's, it just does what The Walking Dead did with vampires instead of zombies. Set in the, like, 1600s instead of, you know, post-apocalypse.
Apocalypse. Yeah. Okay. So, that's disappointing.
Adrian Brody's fantastic, though. So.
Okay. All
right. But yeah. Beyond that.
Right.
So.
All right. Well,
we did get the Guardians. That was the highlight of the week. So.
Yes, it definitely was, and I highly recommend it to anybody, even somebody who doesn't really love the. Love the MCU. I think you can appreciate this one.
Yeah, I agree.
So, where can people find you this week, Logan?
Over at xwingfiles.com, which is still kind of quiet because of the holidays, but I'm sure we'll be gearing back up kind of pre-Christmas. We'll have a bunch of stuff, and then it might be kind of quiet right around Christmas, too. So, and then, of course, my writing, which two really good pieces, I think, coming over at the Movie Isle. Yes. And then I mentioned I watched Home Alone 2. That's going to be the next one that I'm writing about. Awesome. So.
All right. Well, then we will have to make some allowances for that, because I think that we're going to be doing back-to-back for you to make sure that Home Alone 2 is definitely a Christmas, the week of Christmas, it's there and banner high. Speaking behind the scenes, but as Logan was saying, yes, he was talking about the Movie Isle. That's where you can find me, movieisle.com. You can find, you know, Logan's work, which is seriously cooking. And yes, his next two, I will say, I think that we're going to actually have a conversation about his next one that's posting next week. I think we actually should, because it's two of our, it's one of our favorite, like, respectively, it's like a top three movie for me. And I'm fairly certain that Logan, it's the same way. So it merits a discussion. It definitely merits a discussion. And it's odd, because, like, I feel like that one is a Christmas movie too, like a Christmas Thanksgiving movie for me. Because it was a movie that me and my grandfather watched a lot. So that's actually, that's actually interesting for people. But you can read my work, and the work of Marie, another writer, on the site, and Logan on movieisle.com. It's a great place to go and check out stuff right now. If you were concerned about the Reservoir Dogs 4K, if you're that kind of fan, it's $14 right now, and it's got a great transfer. You can read more about that in my review. I was very happy with it, because, like, I've never had a really good, like, there's never been a really good copy of that movie released on home video. It's always looked kind of weird.
That's why I didn't buy it, because I don't have a 4K TV. And I was like, I already own, like, fucking four copies of this on Blu-ray and DVD. And, like, it would be pointless for me to buy this right now, because I do not have a 4K TV. I almost picked it up at Best Buy, and I was like, do I need another copy of Reservoir Dogs that I can't fucking watch the way it's meant to be watched?
That's hilarious.
Anybody that's wondering about that, I agree. Go read Adam's thing. Like, if you have a 4K TV for the price, yes, buy Reservoir Dogs, and go remember, like, before he just got too full of, I mean, he was always full of himself, but too full of himself.
yes.
Remember how fucking great Quentin Tarantino is. Cause, like, man, he was good. Like, I know everybody likes fucking Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, but it was talking about navel gazing. Holy shit. So anyway, that's a talk for another time.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We will see you guys next week. We'll be talking about Willow, I'm sure.
Oh, yes, that's right. Willow! See you guys.
Bye.
Number 2 comics, number 3 Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit, number 4 Mario, number 5 Weird Al, number 6 Batman, number 7 Kal-El, number 8 The Simpsons, number 9 TV, number 10 every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, see it all together if you with me now. Nerds.